Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Diofen Heskey.
Pat Nevin, good evening.
Good evening. I was just listening to you chat away there about Gary Mackay and that game over in Bulgaria.
I don't think we've ever gotten to speak to you about that when you were involved.
I've talked about it once or twice before. It was an interesting thing because we were kind of out of it. Our memory was of Ireland beating us at Hampden Park 1-0. Mark Lawrenson scored the goal from a free kick taken about 50 yards away from where the free kick actually happened.
It's funny, we never mentioned that.
Not that I'm embittered in any way, and I was actually oddly enough talking to Laura about that last week. But the big thing about that team that went over to play against Bulgaria, all we had to fight for was Ireland. So why should we do that? We'll have a look at some of the players that were in that squad. You know, Paul McStays and Brian McClares, myself, they're all kind of Celtic-minded kind of people. We were running our socks off for the. So the thought of, you know, Ireland sitting back there going, oh, I hope Scotland do it for us. Yeah, you know what? There was a hell of a lot of guys there that were desperate to do it for Ireland. And we were celebrating at the end of that like nobody's business because, you know, it actually meant something to us as well. It was a good time. And to go back to your former point you were talking about there, Johnny, they were horrible to play against Ireland at that time. They were absolutely horrible. They had a brilliant team. They had brilliant players. But the style of play was just vile to play against.
Do you remember that, Pat? I find this absolutely fascinating because I was at that stage, 5 or 6 years of age. I don't remember any of this. But what was the narrative? Because as you say, we did have good players and Jack's put them under pressure mantra. Maybe we achieved what we could have achieved. Maybe we overachieved. Maybe we could have done better.
No, I think Richie's right, to be honest. The point is just what the social phenomenon was around it. When you've got that standard of players, you know, that are, you know, brilliant, brilliant players, but you're saying, no, we want you to play within a limited style. And it's pretty much long ball, football and kick and rush. But, you know, with good players within it as well. It's not to denigrate it completely, but, you know, I've seen a lot better football teams. However, if it got you as far as it got you, then well done. I mean, fantastic. It's exactly the right thing. It's about winning. I mean, it just so happens I played football and watched football because I like the artistic side of it. But, you know, it's got to do with winning as well. And Big Jack done an amazing job. And I have told this story on this show before. But after that game when Scotland get beat by Ireland and I come out afterwards, there's my dad standing outside smiling. And I'm going, you're joking, Dad. You weren't supporting them, were you? And he went, well, if you're going to get beat with anyone, son, that's who to get beat by. So I was like, thanks a lot, Dad. I can't say that anymore. I was going to say, I'm but the only one of the 6 siblings who is not an Irish national, except that I am now an Irish national as of last week. So I'm okay.
are you really? What's prompted this?
It's something I should have done millions of years ago. As I say, all my brothers and sisters did it years ago because my background is we're all from Kildare. Originally, so the grandparents and we always used to spend all our holidays around about Dublin, Kildare, down in Waterford, around the place. So I spent most of my youthful years, especially in the summertime, there. And my dad always wanted me to play for Ireland more than Scotland. I mean, I have the same say Ony Coyle, you know, and lots of players like Ray Houghton, etc. And my dad, maybe other members of my family would have chosen Ireland and not Scotland, but I just happened to choose Scotland. And the reason why I'm telling you all this is because when I watched Jack's team, I thought, I think I made the right decision because I wouldn't have got a game because A, they were good players, but B, it really wouldn't have been suited to my style.
I don't know. There was something about a winger that may have fitted in nicely. Jack was always fond of playing wide
like crosses.
Yeah, but get the ball in early.
Launch it.
My last question on that whole topic is, what was Sofia like at that time? Because it was like, that was the old sort of behind the Iron Curtain, Sophia. Oh, yeah. It looked like a really sort of grim, wet night, but like, what was the atmosphere like and what was the place like?
I'm looking at my watch here to make sure I can tell you enough stories about it, but very, very quickly. I turned up at the hotel the day before the game and there was a guy waiting for me there and he said, you're Nevin, aren't you? And I went, yeah, this is before the internet. How do you know me? He goes, you like Bulgarian folk music, don't you? And I went, well, yeah, I do. How do you know that? And he listened to the John Peel show. Anyway, he took me to his house where he had these Bulgarian singers waiting for me. to sing for him in his house. And I, the killer line is when I was walking back, I said, what do you do as a job? And he said, well, I chucked my job yesterday to see you. I was like, what? You've got away from children. And he goes, nah, this is communism. Get another one tomorrow. Mad times behind her. Honestly, mad times.
Come here to me, Pat. What's prompted? Because I know you said like a lot of the family have actually got Irish citizenship. Why now? Why not 10 years ago, as they say in The Simpsons?
I just never got round to it. And of course, when Brexit started happening, just thought, why have I left this so long?
Well, there's been such a spike in UK applications for the Irish passport.
It would have been it probably would have been 2 years ago, but I was behind the queue with my brother. And my brother, I don't know if you know, that to get the citizenship, you have to go and get all the old records, you know, the original records back from Ireland. Yeah. And that takes a long time to get. You have to pull all the stuff together. It's a good lot of work. It's worth it. 100% I feel like it. But, you know, the Brexit would have been the final push, definitely. But it's nice. It's lovely to have it. And I'll be honest with you. I'm hoping I got up tomorrow morning and my passport's waiting on the door. And I've been waiting for about a week and it's not here yet.
If he does fly through Dublin Airport, there's every chance, and this is one of the nicest things about being Irish, coming back home to Dublin Airport.
Waving you through.
The bloke waves you through and he says, have a good day, Johnny. He just reads out your name from your passport, and for some reason, it just feels lovely.
Have a good day, Pat. Make you feel special, doesn't it?
It's just a lovely gesture. I do love coming home to Dublin Airport because you're always kind of giving a friendly welcome back.
Pat, I hate to say we have to talk about football.
Finally, just final word on that. Do you think they'll welcome me through and believe that I'm Irish with the name Patrick Kevin Francis Michael?
No.
Anyway, football.
Football, Pat, football. We'll start at Anfield yesterday because Everton stopped at half-time is pretty much the summation of this one. There's been a lot made of Liverpool's second string or possibly third string, depending on how you want to look at it, beating a rather experienced Everton side that contained the likes of Gylfi Sigurdsson, that contained the likes of Theo Walcott, and more we could name, but for fear of embarrassment, we'll leave them alone. That was a shocking second-half performance from Everton.
Well, that was the closest. It's just about the best first team he could have put out there. It really was, you know, and it was one of those ones where, as an Evertonian, you're thinking, yeah, brilliant, fantastic, great chance to get one over in Liverpool, get through in the cup. And you almost didn't think of the embarrassment of losing to that group of, you know, youngsters and players that don't get a game and the odd first team is stuck in there. And Everton should have been well ahead by half-time, there's no doubt about that, but it just shows you that kind of confidence that's been built under Duncan, that's been built a wee bit with Ancelotti, it's wafer thin. It's absolute paper thin, and it can disappear very, very quickly. And I suppose just about the time when I was beginning to think, my goodness, this could be embarrassing, I think the players began to think it. And when you think that way, you stop playing the way you were playing before. And of course, a big part of it, Liverpool, those kids were playing, or those young players and reserve players, we're playing pretty damn good football as well. So it's horrible as an Evertonian. It was horrible to feel that you can't beat Liverpool's first stroke, second stroke, third side.
Is there an aspect to this though, that, as you say, Liverpool's second string, there's probably a tide of good kind of vibes in the club. That's going to almost translate to the players that come through. And for Everton, maybe there was this feeling of like, this is kind of a loss situation here, because we win, obviously people say we're playing a second string team, and maybe it's hard to motivate yourself against players that you know aren't even Liverpool's first team, and maybe psychologically for Everton it was just a little bit more difficult than an average game.
If you're finding it hard to motivate yourself for a Merseyside derby, you're in trouble though.
Not even motivate, but just not play to your peak, because it's a hard situation when you're playing against a second string team that are actually playing above themselves.
There are very, very few players that will make that excuse. There might be something in it, you're absolutely right, but it's not enough. It's nowhere near enough for an excuse. You are the first team players. You're getting paid whatever we're getting paid a week in comparison to these players you're playing against. These aren't first stringers that are playing every single week. A lot of the Everton players, there's a lot of international players in that team as well. Should be better. It's full stop. If you start putting your hand up as you're a player and you're the manager and looking for excuses at that point in time, It's just unacceptable. It's just not good enough. It was a real shame for them. In a way, you know, eventually that will fade. And if Everton carry on the good run they've had in the league and they get themselves perfectly safe and Ancelotti can start building, particularly through January, and get one or two players in, then oddly it might be a good thing in retrospect, but only in retrospect after some time. It was horrible to be, I mean, I had my head in my hands, to be honest. I couldn't see that it was going to happen. There's never been a better opportunity. You know, a long, long time since, I mean, even the years I played with Everton against Liverpool so many times, we rarely beat them. They were a hell of a good side then, a really good side then. So when you get a chance to beat them, you done them. You really went for it. And that was a massive opportunity missed. And you got to move on for it. And if there's a new manager, he'll be given a little bit of, you know, leeway, all that sort of stuff. It's not his team, all that sort of stuff. But it's horrible. There's no upside to it. Sorry.
It strikes me that that leeway has been afforded a succession of managers at Everton. And that's borne out in some of the, I don't want to use the word detritus, but it's the only one that springs to mind. There is a lot of, you know, flotsam in that squad that probably needs, before you mentioned there, him buying players in January, there are some that definitely need shipping out and quickly.
Yeah, and I think part of it had been done by Silva, a wee bit of a part of it had been done. And some of the players had been stalwarts and greats, like Jagielka for Everton. I mean, wonderful servants to the club, but there comes a time, there comes an age. It's physically hurts you to say, maybe Leighton Baines isn't the player he was before, because I love the guy so much.
But it's not even the Baines of this world or the Jagielkas, it's the ones that have been bought over the past 5 years, the likes of Theo Walcott, the likes of Cenk Tosun, the likes of Gylfi Sigurdsson. They just look nowhere near, in terms of attitude, good enough. And yeah, good enough is what Everton need.
Yeah, no, I kind of know that there is good enough quality in maybe Sigurdsson anyway. But you're right, the others are the players that are capable of taking you into the top level. I mean, Tosun's just, you know, and maybe that's, to come back to the realism of it, if you're a manager, if you're an executive, if you're the buyer and seller, whatever, these guys have got contracts. So either you pay them up, try and hoof them out somewhere, but they ain't going to go to somewhere where they're not getting the same wages, so you have to then pay, you know, obviously the other part of the wages they're not getting paid. So it's not a cheap business to do that. And sometimes they just won't move. The modern day football, there are quite a few there that think, nah, I'll just hang around. You know, I'm picking up money here. It's an easy... I can remember David Moyes telling me a story once, which I found astonishing. He found astonishing too. He was trying to get rid of some of the players that weren't doing it for him. There was one player in particular, he tried everything and then got him in his office and sat him down and said, look, I think you've gone a bit soft. I think you've got a bit lazy. I think you get a lot of money every week and there's just no fighting hunger there. And he went, yeah. What? Moise had nowhere to go. He had nowhere to go with it. He just stood there going, he had never expected that answer. So there are people around like that, you know, because if you're a multimillionaire and you don't need to ever work again, some of them might not say it openly, but there's guys there. So it's going to be not necessarily, you know, that he can do it in one transfer window, but over two or three, he'll be able to do that.
Yeah, and the hope is that they will have patience with him, because the last thing you want is for a bad run of results this time next year, say, to maybe ask the question of the board, you know, is this Ancelotti experiment working out? And you end up shipping him out for a hell of a lot of money in terms of compensation, because we know the length of contract that he's after getting there at Goodison, and you end up back at square one again.
Yeah, I mean, that's the chance you take with any manager, but it's a massive one with Ancelotti. I think they do know the technical abilities of the guy, so if they give him a good enough group of players, and he, you know, obviously mentions a few, he's got great knowledge of the European game, particularly the Italian game, so he should be able to, you know, put his finger out and say that and that. And if he does that and they get him, then, and they fail, then he'll deserve to be shipped out. Simply, he will deserve. There's a lot of money being spent in that squad. Although it's still kind of hard to see where we think about it. But I think he'll get, I think he's good enough to do it within this league to get them mid-table, you know, probably safety with a few months to spare. And then he can really consider what happens the next season. You do a bit in January, but the real work will happen in the summer.
A great performance as well, we should mention, on the other side of the pitch by Liverpool. In particular, Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott stood out. They might be a combined age of, I think, 34 between the two of them, but they still look like incredible prospects.
Yeah, it was interesting because, I mean, many would have watched the Aston Villa game when Liverpool played the Aston Villa, and they lost 5-0. A lot of young players played there, and there was lots of, you know, chin stroking saying, yes, there's a big step up to be made, etc., etc. But, you know, it sometimes takes a while, and there were quite a lot of different players playing in that team. However, yet they've got a production line there that seems to be able to bring some players through. We keep on thinking, what do Liverpool need to add? You know, the old Shankly saying, you add at the top. You don't add when you're on the way down, which is what everybody generally does. You add at the top. That's when you add, because the next one's ready to come through when those guys dip. Liverpool looks as if, you know, they probably will continue to add one or two each season, not more than that. But they've got these kids coming through, which look as if they're going to be capable of stepping in. And you know, the step in with Liverpool's, it's not an easy step in, but there's plenty of guys. We often talk about that midfield. So who's the best midfield? Well, probably three from six. And you kind of don't know which three it is. Well, if you've got another one or two coming on there, they can slot in and fit in with the rest of the machine works well. It's a really good system. Sounds easy to do. It's been brilliant the way Klopp's organised it.
It's intriguing about Liverpool as well. The article that was in The Athletic the other day about Jordan Henderson, and obviously how Fergie sort of wrote him off because of his gait and so forth, and Henderson sort of embodies that team. And I think Liverpool is now, notwithstanding just what they've achieved on the pitch, it's a very, very attractive place for really any footballer in the world to go to, because Klopp is there, the style of football, the goals they score, the feel-good factor about the team, and the fact that they're, you know, regulars in the end of the Champions League, and they're absolutely walking away with the Premier League, and they can bring in players and character vet them and know that it's not going to change the philosophy of that team, because it's just full of, it seems to be full of good characters. And I suppose the obvious comparison that was made was Pogba as a sort of captain of Manchester United compared to Henderson. They just, that team looks to be in for the long term in a very, very good place. And whoever they add, they can probably nearly add almost anyone at this stage, because who would not want to play for Liverpool at the moment?
Yeah, but I think you're absolutely right. I was talking about it on the show last week, that I thought this spirit thing's the most important thing. If you haven't got the correct spirit, you probably wouldn't have been bought in the first place. If you are bought, you better go and change it really quickly. And if you don't, you're out. Really, really simple with Klopp. The thing is, players will generally buy into it. And this big thing about if you're left out, do you hear anyone complaining? There's nobody complaining about it, because, you know, they trust and they believe in the manager. Absolutely. And you mentioned Pogba there. I don't think Liverpool would touch Pogba with a barge pole.
No, they wouldn't.
Not with a barge pole. They wouldn't touch.
And there's no, like, there's absolutely, you're picking your fancy football team or you're picking your championship manager team, whatever. Pogba's most talented player in the Liverpool midfield by a country mile. I wouldn't buy him, wouldn't go near him with a barge pole.
Yeah, and I do think that's the case. And that's just the personality thing. And it's, do you look at any of those Liverpool players? I mean, Mo Salah is a world-class player. And, you know, but he seems very interested in playing football. There'll be RFS with his face in it, and there'll be various things he does. But you look at Pogba and you wonder, you know, is the image as important as the actual playing? In simple terms, Liverpool historically just don't accept that. You just don't want that. The other thing, all those things you mentioned about why you would go back to Liverpool, you'd go to Liverpool if you were a player. The other thing on top of that, which wasn't a thing for a long time, the history. The history was, well, that's distant now, that's gone. Well, that history has to as well, because everyone thinks, oh yeah, they were one of the greatest teams in the world for a huge long period, and everyone kind of dismissed it for a long time. You know, a very good team, but are a good team, but they were dismissed of that level. No longer. They are now considered absolutely up there. The other thing, it was a downer. I'd heard it said many times, people were choosing the likes of Arsenal or Chelsea, and it was wanting to live in London, because some people then wanted to live in London.
That literally came to light tonight. There was a piece with Stephen Gerrard. He was talking about trying to coax Willian to come to Liverpool back in 2013, I think it was. And Willian said that his exact quote was that his wife just wanted to live in London. There was no chance that they were, as a family, going to be heading to the Northwest.
And it's extraordinary. Obviously, I lived in both. I had 5 years in London and had like 9 years up, 10 years up in the Northwest. Northwest is a brilliant place to live, but it's what suits you. I mean, nobody lives in the centre of Liverpool if you're a player, because it's impossible. But the places around there are absolutely amazing. You know, to the south is Chester, Southport's great. All these other places, you know, over midway between there and Manchester, great. And you've got the, you know, the artistic, and you've got the, you know, the restaurants, everything you want in Liverpool, and particularly Manchester as well. You can do all that sort of stuff. So it may well be that players from foreign nations, you know, they'll think, well, wait a minute, Liverpool is, you know, a good city, but London's a world-class city. You know, you talk about London, New York, Paris, etc. And they're right. They're actually right there. And the wives, if it's them that's making the decision, unless they're thinking about where's the best place to bring up the kids, I can understand why they go for London.
In the world of, you know, the Instagram footballer and all that, and, you know, they're paid obviously they're paid astronomical wages. There's an inherent decency about that Liverpool bunch of players. From Henderson, you know, the last Liverpool game I was at, his captain's notes in the programme were all about imploring people to raise money for the Sean Cox fundraiser. Obviously then embracing his dad, who'd suffered horrific illness after the Champions League final. Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, used to pretty much mitch off school so he could watch Liverpool train in his home city. And as much as...
The Salah stories are amazing.
Yeah. You
know, look at them. As I, the one player on top of that, I think, to me, embodies it. And it's not the player anyone ever talks about. And it's Milner.
Absolutely.
See, just the perfection of what a Liverpool player should be.
But he was, so he did 13K, I think, in the game at the weekend. At, what is he, 34?
34 years of age. I was just going to bring that up, Pat, because he was the one who suffered a hamstring injury yesterday, pretty early on, in yesterday's win over Everton. Jurgen Klopp was almost chiding himself after the match for picking him, because he'd played in a bunch of matches, obviously, leading into this one, and he'd wanted to make changes, but needed a couple of experienced players still in the starting 11. Milner was going to be one of those, and ends up picking up an injury. This seems like a conversation that obviously is one that comes up over and over again, because managers aren't fond of the amount of games that are played over the festive period. But Ken Early's article in the Times today pointed out that there is need for a change, because the amount of running and the amount of work that needs to be done for a successful team to stay successful and to win matches, and the amount of kilometres covered, has changed immeasurably from the days when this was just seen as a thing that just has to happen.
Yeah, it used to be the midfielders would have always done those sort of miles anyway. That's fine, but you want everybody to do it now. You want a lot of defenders to do that now. You want your fullbacks to be doing that now, because they're going to be overlapping. Everybody has to be doing it to some level. I watched Ozil in the first half of this game tonight. Honestly, if he covered half a mile, I'd have been shocked. You know, it was a shambles. Honestly, it was a mess. So you're right. You need all that together. You need everybody working. See, if you play against a team and you're playing at that level, see if there's two guys not working, you'll do them. You'll absolutely do them in the modern game, because you'll know where that weakness is. You'll feel it in the team and you'll get that. Actually, you've mentioned the Times there. How long have we got? Have we got a minute?
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a story to tell you. I've forgotten all about this. I was on a radio show called Off the Ball in Scotland.
That's the one we always get messages about on our Facebook page.
Anyway, it's a good laugh. It's two kind of, it's a fun one. It's called Petty and Ill-Informed, a show. And I used to present it sometimes as well. Anyways, are we
saying we're not fun, by the way?
Yeah, there was a thinly veiled, yeah.
There was a dig there, Pat.
You're serious and shite.
Thanks, Tony. Yeah,
it's true. No, take the second part away. The first part is good. I like this. Your serious stuff at the base of this show and this whole idea, but we can have it and take it in a light way. Whereas that show is just a laugh. It's just a laugh, right? It's petty and ill-informed. That's its tagline, right? So you wouldn't call yourself petty and ill-informed, right? Yeah, absolutely.
I don't
know
about, well.
One and one here, Pat, I think. We're not going to say which is which. Yeah.
Anyway, the reason being, I was coming to the end, I told a whole bunch of stories and I was having a big laugh. And I remember the story that happened to me a wee while ago. And the story was, I was in the island of Arran. And I was driving around up in the west coast of Scotland. I was driving around, and as I drove around, I nearly hit a cyclist. And just got out of his way. And as I went by, I checked him out. I thought, he looks hell of a lot Roman Abramovich, that guy. Anyway, about a week later, this story, he was on that island that day. I nearly killed Roman Abramovich. So this had happened to me about 3 years ago, and I kind of,
he was on a bike.
Why wouldn't he be on a bike? He likes exercise.
Yeah, does he?
Well, he does. He takes these massive big yacht up the Mullaghcentire, and then him and a number of his mates and bodyguards as well. They love the place. They love the west coast of Scotland. It's one of the most beautiful places. I go with my holidays there every year because it's brilliant and it's absolutely beautiful. And he apparently loves the whole area. So, but I hadn't thought about it anyway. And I never ever told that story. Anyway, I told that story for a wee laugh Sunday night. It was only in the Times page 3 today. And the Scotsman, and I thought I told it as a laugh. They were having this big banner headline, Nevin nearly kills Abramovich. And to this day, I'm pretty sure it was him, because I remember going, well, I nearly killed that guy there. And then only found out later.
It definitely was him. Definitely was. Mistake Roman Abramovich and then you happen to be in the area. Definitely
well,
was
and
him.
The fact that when I got down to the bottom of the hill and I turned around, there was a big old yacht out there. I should have probably figured it out, but you know, I'd other things in my mind, I'd golf in my mind or something.
Have you considered the consequences of what would have happened if that actually, you know, went through?
I don't think you'd be on off the ball either show.
Hey, now that it's getting out, I don't know if I want to consider the consequences.
Attempted manslaughter, is that a thing?
You know, the worst thing about it, I actually know him okay as well. You know, I've met him 3 or 4 times.
Have you told him? Well,
no. You'll know now because it's been in the Times.
Roman, it's kind of a funny story, actually. You know, I meant to tell it to you, but...
I nearly killed you, Roman. He's like, what?
I think I've forgotten all about it.
And for then years, I wondered who that man was.
It's quite the accent, Johnny. Hold on.
I thought you looked like Bert Nevin.
He's keeping going.
I'm not be taking on his lawyers.
Wow. All right. That's taken an interesting turn. Nearly came to Roman Abramovich. Okay, where do you go? Where do you even go? Well, we'll go with Chelsea because Callum Hudson-Odoi put in one of those performances that justified his lengthy contract and the talk of big money moves to Bayern Munich around this time last year. In yesterday's game, Pat, it seems as if not only did Chelsea have a natty kit to go along with their win yesterday, but they also had a really good performance too.
Oh, come on. How good was that kit?
It's too good.
It's the weirdest thing. First kit I ever bought as a 7-year-old. That kit, but I didn't have a number.
The Peter Osgood one?
Yeah, and I sewed the number on. I got my mum to sew the number on. I love that kit, and that's weird for a Celtic supporting boy in the East End of Glasgow to buy a blue shirt. That's how much I love this Chelsea shirt. It was brilliant. Anyway, that was great. I think it was whoever came up with that idea, that was genius, absolute genius. But Hudson-Odoi is an interesting one, a really interesting one, because I've watched a whole bunch of his games since he came back in, and he's not looked anywhere close to the player that was there before he was injured. And technically, the one thing, it was just the explosiveness. You really didn't see it quite the same way. And I didn't say too much about it because he's coming back from an injury. It's that horrible injury. It's an injury probably you least want. You know, if you've torn your Achilles, it has sometimes stops careers, you know, absolutely dead in the tracks. Remember talking to John Barnes about it when he'd done his, and he said he never played in the wing again. He just went centre midfield. He just couldn't explode in pace. So I was worried that you wonder if Callum would get back. But just the last game or so that I've seen him, that wee spark's been there. That little explosion of pace has been back. So it may well have been just as a young player, he needed a little bit of time. He's still been creating goals when he's got opportunities this season. But you're beginning to see that. And there's a lot of talk, particularly from the likes of me, about Zaha would be the perfect player to get in at Chelsea because they need to get somebody to break down these packed defences at home. Well, you never know. Maybe Callum might be able to do it.
I think I actually saw a quote from there today saying he actually was playing with that injury in the back of his mind. So he'd come back from a ruptured Achilles. As you mentioned, John Barnes was never the same player again. He was always sitting deep in midfield. We didn't see that, you know, marauding left winger. And Hudson-Odoi, to be fair, you would, with that kind of injury, had it basically playing in the back of his mind.
Yeah, if it was playing in the back of his mind, but that's okay, because one day you'll forget about it. But if it's not in the back of your mind, it's actually the injury still there, and you haven't got the elasticity back in that part. And it's quite often that's the thing, the lack of elasticity in the tendon itself. Everyone talks about, you know, the old times everyone talked about, oh, he's got a broken leg, terrible. Players get broken legs, as long as they're not those big impacted ones. But yeah, break, you just think, okay, it's going to be a number of months, I'll get it reset and I'll carry on again. But the things like the, you know, anterior cruciate ligaments and those sort of things, they're the ones that really worry. But on top, even above the ACL, that's the one the players don't want. So to have it so young, somebody did tell me that getting it actually young is not a bad thing, because the chances of regrowth are better.
Pat, before we let you go, we've had loads of texts in support of your newfound Irish citizenship. Great news. Congratulations and welcome to the party, Patrick Nevin.
Thank you.
That's from Sean the Chef in Fermoy. Just when I thought I couldn't like Pat any more than I already do, he goes and pays us the highest possible compliment and becomes one of us. Welcome, Pat. You're always part of the family anyway, says John. Tony says, Pat, now that you've been assimilated, you can expect our natural begrudgery to start coming out of your pores. Good luck with that one, Pat. And Dinny in Cork says, lads, tell Pat I loved him before this evening. Pat, we're doing that for you right now. Dinny, we're doing that for you now. Before he talked Irish heritage and pending passport, which is news to me, I love him even more. He's welcome in my native city of Cork and my adopted home, West Cork, anytime. There is an important difference. His first point is on me, so long as he's happy to settle in and talk tactics for the night. That is from Dinny in Cork. Can we send on your address?
For the invite.
If you like West Scotland, you'll bloody love West Cork.
Absolutely. There you go. That's their new tourism tagline. If you like West Scotland,
You'll love West Cork. Pat Nevin, thank you.
A pleasure as ever. Speak to you soon.
It is Arsenal 1, Leeds 0. There's 5 minutes left at the Emirates. We'll be back with more after this.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Duff and Heskey.
Make that 3 minutes to go at the Emirates. Arsenal 1, Leeds United 0. Reece Nelson's goal early in the second half, separating the sides. You don't want to go with the game of two halves nonsense, but Arsenal have been much improved since the break. We're seeing a replay via VAR of Sead Kolasinac, who could find himself in a spot of bother here for lashing out at one of the Leeds players while sat in his arse near the corner flag. But it is still Arsenal 1, Leeds 0. Anthony Taylor, I don't think, is going to take any extra action. He's got the hand finger to the ear as if he's singing a folk song, but there's nothing doing as of yet. We didn't touch on it with Pat, but it was a great weekend for Irish players in the FA Cup, and not only, and at least of which, for Adam Ida, who scored a hat-trick for Norwich City in their victory away to Preston. Earlier today, Keith Andrews was on This Morning on OTBAM, and he reckons Ida's apparent breakthrough could actually hamper his progression.
The manager afterwards said he's not going to go on loan. Apparently Doncaster were in and they were close to a deal being done. In some ways, you know, you wouldn't mind seeing somebody like that go out on loan and just play football for the next 4 or 5 months for the rest of the season. Because at Norwich, like, it's a Premier League team. His minutes will automatically be fewer than they would be if he was to go out on loan.
Yeah, I think the issue you have with these young players is that it's brilliant that they do well and the respective club managers think highly of them. But you can ironically be too close to a first team, and that is actually detrimental to your development because you don't get enough minutes. And even when you're that close and you're on the bench, you don't even play 23s football at times, so your general fitness isn't quite up to speed. So, yeah, you're right. Look, I think the Doncaster ones, I would imagine, dead and buried now. I spoke to Doncaster assistant manager last week and he was of the assumption that it was kind of done and dusted, but I'd be very surprised if that happens now after his exploits at the weekend against Preston.
Yeah.
He makes an interesting point there. You could be too close to the first team. It's an interesting rock and a hard place.
There is a nugget of truth to that, because you look at what Troy Parrott's weekend entailed, namely a trip to Middlesbrough, sat on the bench for the duration, and he doesn't really, bar the experience of being in and around the first team, doesn't gain anything more from it than that. And that's the situation that I think a lot of Irish players find themselves in at that age.
Troy is 17 going on 18, and he's, I think it's different for Adam Ida in that he's, I've actually started calling him Ida now. I think it's different for him in that he's probably ready. Troy doesn't, there's no rush with him at all, and I think physically he's definitely a bit more to come. I don't see him not being in the picture now for Premier League, coming off the bench with 10 minutes left. You know, they wouldn't really have, as much as I haven't seen much of Norwich, they don't seem to have an awful lot of pace up front. And he's quick and he's strong and he can hold up the ball, and he obviously is full of confidence. I would imagine, listen to the coach who was understandably playing it down afterwards. And it was
playing it down beforehand. I thought he took an interesting tack on Friday, because I think it was known that Ida was going to start, given the fact that they've had injuries and they're going to switch things around anyway. He was going to play. He was asked directly about him, Daniel Farke, and he said pretty much, yeah, he came on as a sub for the last 2-3 minutes against Palace and he didn't really do a whole lot. And he was actually pointing to the fact that he hasn't done anything.
He played it down big time. His performance against, was it Crawley in the League Cup?
The League Cup as well,
He said he didn't look anywhere near it. It was a strange one for Adam Ida, because the first goal was very good, right? Mm. So once you get that goal, you can basically do nothing for the rest of the game and you will be buzzing, right? So his confidence, it's like everything he did after that was almost a bonus. And then he made the point about his second goal. I've never scored a goal like that before, ever. So the ball just literally lands on his feet. The keeper is in absolute no man's land. That goal, to me, isn't actually as good as it looked. He just had to basically
direct it,
get it over the defender and the keeper and head it towards goal on his left foot. And it was just, his confidence is that high. And his third goal is obviously a penalty. So we're in danger of obviously getting carried away. But at the same time,
let's get carried away, Johnny.
Let's get carried away.
Yeah.
Let's get carried away, Richie. You got very carried away on Saturday. You said, we're going to win something under Stephen Kenny. But the fact that he's got to be on the cusp of at least coming off the bench in these big games, because I don't think Norwich have enough to lose at the moment anyway.
Yeah, Norwich don't have enough to lose. Mick McCarthy was speaking about Ida directly yesterday. I think he was on duty for one of the FA Cup games for BT Sport. And was saying that he's probably earned himself a call-up by nature of his performance against Preston. And, you know, that'll be a welcome thing. Perhaps, possibly not so for Stephen Kenny's under-21s.
Yeah.
But he will be in the reckoning. You're kind of doubting he would unseat someone like David McGoldrick, who, if he stays fit, is going to be Ireland's leading man over in Slovakia.
Yeah, and like, as much as McGoldrick's been one of our better players, without a doubt, like, his goal scoring record is bad at the moment. He's not scoring goals, and he's putting in a shift, but we're kind of lauding a player who's not scoring goals. And Stephen Kenny has made this point: we haven't been inclined to give young players a chance at senior level, whereas he's playing a lot of these under-19s and even 17-year-olds at under-21 level without any kind of... there isn't that scrutiny there. And, you know, the point has been made, we've never been inclined to sort of give up a campaign with a view to the future because we've needed the money, I suppose. But we're trusting players like some of the players we've had in this campaign don't really have a future for Ireland long-term, but they've been played because they were deemed... You're thinking particularly the game in Switzerland.
Where nakedly, that's what the aim of the McCarthy second term has been.
And you have to feel a bit sorry for him.
Because we need money. And yeah. I do feel sorry for him.
You have to feel a bit sorry because if Mick had the players that Stephen Kenny will have, there's no doubt he would do better than he's done with this crop of players, because he's far more options going forward. And he didn't take the job initially thinking he was only there for one campaign. So I do have a little bit of sympathy for him.
I do, but the thing about it is, and somebody mentioned earlier on, is like, are we getting carried away? I had that tweet of the weekend saying we'll win a trophy under Stephen Kenny.
Was that tongue-in-cheek or no?
Yes and no. Because I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that you can have those discussions.
Yeah.
If the squad is developed right, if they settle in together properly, and he actually is given a chance to bed players in, because we've always been... You're like that person who lives, and I count myself among them, who lives from payday to payday. And basically there's no sense that you're saving up for a future. And I think with Stephen Kenny and the happenstance, because it's not him that developed them, let's remember, the happenstance of a great crop of young players coming through at the same time. We have a manager who has a really good way of playing football. He has a trust in youth, and we have a glut of young players who are of a similar level and all pretty good, that could en masse go through to the national setup. And I think...
And they're much better than pretty good for that level.
But my point is that they're all at a similar level and they're all pretty good. International football is not the absolute peak of playing professional football.
No.
And succeeding in international football is not about being the best players. Otherwise, Lionel Messi would have won 4 World Cups by now. He's won none. The best teams at international level are the best organised. And it has a manager who recognises that he has a short span of time with which to work with these players and has a limited amount of time to convey what he wants them to do on a tactical basis. Stephen Kenny knows what he wants to do. Stephen Kenny has worked with a lot of these players. There is every chance that if he organises things well and hit the ground running, they could well be a well-performing side, and they could well be a side that doesn't perform with fear away from home, that doesn't go away trying things out, trying three at the back when you've never played it before. There's a sense that there's actually a bit of cohesion possible about this side.
We could have a team with the likes of Doherty right back, centre backs of O'Shea and maybe Duffy, left back it'll be, I would say, either Ryan Manning or Stevens. Midfield we could have Malumbi, Horahan, and possibly Conor Coventry or
Gavin Kilkenny.
Or Kilkenny, or even Jason Knight, who's only 18. Left and right, we could have sort of Ida and Aaron Connolly with Parrott up front, a mixture of something like that. 4-5-1, I think, will be the system. Conor Ronan in the picture. I think Horahan will be a lot better under Kenny.
Jonathan Afolabi. Luca Connell.
Lee O'Connor is a player of an awful great time for. I think Bazuna could be a really, really top keeper. But what I think is really intriguing is the one sort of query about Kenny getting this job is, and you remember when he was at Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah.
Like, it was an absolute shambles. Rovers were so poor under Stephen Kenny. And it's impossible to even reconcile that with what's happened subsequently. But he's taken over a team that aren't his players, that he didn't sign, right? And he's taken over Premier League stars that may not respect him or rate him. to me,
I don't think that's there in the same level it was when Kerr took over.
No, I completely agree. But even if that were the case, what we have now is that has been completely flipped on its head. In that, I think there are literally a handful of players in this Ireland team that are certain of their place under Stephen Kenny going forward. Mm. I think a handful. There is no absolutely outstanding player in this team where you could say, no, there's no way he won't be playing. Because our outstanding Premier League player at the moment hasn't even been playing for us in Doherty, right? So Doherty hasn't even been getting his game. Randolph is 32. McGoldrick is 31. Coleman is probably coming towards the end. McLean, I think, is probably finished once he takes over. I'd say he'll really struggle to play. Even the centre-backs, I don't think they're certain of their places. Like, Duffy is not really a Kenny player in ways because he's not that comfortable on the ball.
He can't play out from the back.
So I don't think none of the central midfielders is that. Like, Curran hasn't been great for Ireland. I think he'll be much better under Kenny. But there's none of them players, to my mind, is really certain of a place under Stephen Kenny. And that's how you flip it on its head, because they know that he loves these under-21s and he will have no issue whatsoever in playing them.
And they already know and respect him. They know what he expects of them.
Yeah.
It's all good.
What can possibly go wrong, Richie?
Someone is saying, Podge, win silverware. What, like a Georgina Campbell restaurant plaque? Your tracky top is zipped up too tight, Richie. It stopped the blood from going to your head. Correction, Podge. There ain't no zip on this at all. It is a sweatshirt.
It's got a bit of tartan going on there. Kind of Scottish.
Me and Pat. We're kinfolk.
That just going back to winning the trophy, when Charlton took over, I think there was some sort of little three-team tournament
Iceland.
In Iceland.
Yeah.
So we'd have a chance of winning that.
You've watched that DVD well, is he?
The first half an hour. I've been got a text in, actually, or a response in relation to the that actual video I watched of Charlton. Dave O'Grady, he's like, the Charlton Years video is great, but I preferred the Jack's Heroes video, which just focused on Italia 90 and had better match coverage and much more good stuff from the fans, plus great music and that epic Mars ad at the start.
There's another one knocking around on YouTube where they won't go into too much of a dalliance. The Roads to USA, which was put out commercially, I think, afterwards. Brilliantly shot. Looks absolutely gorgeous. Really, really lovely looking film.
What you bloody well forget as well is that, like, Bob Paisley was the man.
He came very close.
He was the guy, and there was some weird quirk of the voting system, like proportional representation or something.
It was, yeah, yeah.
There was some bizarre, I can't really explain this. Gilesy explains it properly in the video.
Gilesy was involved in it.
But Jack Charlton was like, he was never going to get this job. Like, he wasn't really considered. Like, it was all Bob Paisley. And Bob Paisley was obviously a bit of a patriarch at that stage. I don't know what age he was. But funny enough, I think we've made that mistake too often, where we've relied on these elder managers and we haven't really taken a punt on a young manager. You could say we took a punt on Steve Staunton, but we haven't taken a punt on a young up-and-come manager until now. But Stephen Kenny, I remember having this argument with lads. I was like, would Stephen Kenny take the Ireland under 21 job and leave Dundalk? And the only reason I think he did was because he knew that the big job was coming afterwards. Because the Ireland 21 job was a bit of a joke. In fairness,
you look at who was taking care of it and the care that it was given.
None.
Yeah, I think the only worry is that you need to insulate all of this, and especially the senior side, from the ongoing mess of the FAI.
And I would just like to mention as well, the likes of Colin O'Brien and Tom Moan, and even the 15s beating England 3-1 away this year and playing ridiculous football. The days of, you go watch kids play football now, the days of Ireland playing caveman football are toast, as far as I'm concerned. Once this campaign is over, that's basically, it's year zero after that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of credit has to go to Rude Doctor.
I totally agree.
Arsenal have beaten Leeds by 1-0. We'll be back with mopping up the rest after these.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Duff and Heskey.
Welcome back to the final part of the Football Show. Arsenal are through to round four of the FA Cup. They'll be away to Bournemouth after Rhys Nelson gave them a 1-0 win over Leeds. A remarkably different second half performance from Arsenal after Leeds dominated the first half. Alexandre Lacazette has been interviewed by the BBC in the past few moments, asked what Mikel Arteta said to them at the break. His quote was merely, "He shout a lot." I'd imagine there was a little bit more nuance to it than that, but Arsenal very much a different side in the second
half. Sometimes the shout is enough.
Absolutely. Sorry it's not a sports question, asked Bernard, and thank you for your text, Bernard. But myself and a few friends were talking about going to Iran sometime in the future. Bernard might avoid it for the time being. But one of my friends is a woman. How difficult do you think getting around the country would be? Says Bernard. Bernard, congratulations on having a woman as a friend, first of all.
Can we get Bernard on the show?
Absolutely.
I have a woman as a friend.
I think we should go to Bernard's house and do a show from the front room.
Bernard, have you been there? It's very easy to get around. Like, it's a big country, but the bus service is excellent. You can get trains as well. It's very easy to get around. The most hospitable people I've ever met in terms of my travels anyway. And mightn't be the best time to go is the only thing. But your friend of the female variety will be obliged to wear just the... It's not... I should know this. It's not the
headscarf.
It's basically a headscarf and kind of cover your arms. But she'll have an absolute blast. But don't be expecting to be on the piss because there's no booze over there.
There you go. About Ida's second goal, Adam Ida is a right-footed player. The calmness of mind to hit the shot and what should have been taken is what should be taken from it.
Yeah.
Says another texter.
I think it's kind of a strange thing psychologically, and I'm not trying to put myself into the mind. I am. I'm actually. I think once you score a goal, everything is a bonus. And like, you've just free shots at everything. He could try that because if that was like the 89th minute and he'd had a poor game, I think it would have been very different.
And they were trailing 1-0.
That's
a different effort.
But it was great composure. And in fairness to him, there are lots of aspects to his game. He's very, very quick, direct. But he also, and you see with the 21s, he can play very clever balls into the box when he's in wide areas. And as much as he loves scoring goals, he's not selfish.
I hope you've enjoyed tonight's edition of the...
Enjoyed? Adam Ida. Richie, we've bloody well won the... We've won a tournament.
We've won the Euros. But this has been the Adam Ida fan club show. We will have another back tomorrow at 7 p.m. And don't forget, tomorrow, OTBAM, our daily sports breakfast show, is back at 7:30 in the morning. You can get it on all our social channels and listen on OTB Sports Radio via the Go Loud app. Jerron Owen will have Tadhg Kennelly on the show. Very pressing given the nature of Colin McShane's impending move to Australia. Gary Breen as well, what's been a good night for Arsenal. And Killian Clark, who's opted to take a year out from inter-county duties with Cavan. He's among the many in the inter-county scene as well this year. We'll be back tomorrow night at 7. I'm reliably informed that Joe will be here along with Nathan Murphy, God help me. The great Tom Dunn is up next. Thanks to everybody in the box for making this happen. Good luck and good night.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Diouf and Heskey.